if you live in one postcode area and you travel 200 yards down the road, your life expectancy can change by 3, 4, 5 years. Absolutely incredible that that can exist.
So I can go and buy a bookshelf in IKEA and it'll be given in about 17 different languages or however many languages, and there'll be pictures to support that. Why don't we have that in healthcare?
Both Dr. Linus Jones, a respiratory consultant, and Dr. Sean Clarkson, Head of Strategic Operations for the Yorkshire and Humber AHSN, are familiar with this part of the UK. Their observations, though, could relate to many other locations. They both are passionate about the need to tackle health inequalities and improve care for communities who may be overlooked. At ConFed Expo, they explained more about the reasons for calling for change and the ideas they have to bring it about.
When I started my clinic, the difficult asthma service over in Dewsbury, I'd already worked in the area for some time, and I recognised that actually I was serving a population that was both socially deprived, poor literacy levels, and lots of people who didn't speak English very well and certainly didn't read and write in English very well. So you couple that with a condition where you have to self-manage for the rest of your life, and you're clearly going to need resources to help with that. Now, the lack of resources, and I'm saying near total lack of resources, makes it so difficult for certain communities and certain individuals with difficulties in reading and writing. And I just wanted to level that, because it's clearly an unacceptable lack of equity of care. And, you know, we need those resources to help our patients. They deserve that, they should have it, and it should already be there. For heaven's sake, it's 2022. So there's lots of solutions that we need to look at to make things better.
And people listening to this might be surprised to think, well, actually, it's not in place. You know, they might be surprised to learn that it's not there. But that is the case. That's what you're seeing day in, day out, is it?
Absolutely. So I found one peak flow action plan in different languages on a website, and that was really it. You know, we're asking a lot of our patients, and yet not able to support them in a way that's going to affect change.
And these are patients who English isn't the first language. They need perhaps this kind of information more than most people.
Absolutely. I mean, not just people who don't speak English, though. I mean, I have patients in my clinic who have learning disabilities or difficulties, so people who are British-born, English-speaking, but don't read and write at all. And I have, you know, I have a real smorgasbord of different challenges in my clinic. It's a lot of the challenges I see aren't just challenges of language barriers, but also there's cultural barriers, there's cultural misconceptions, there's stigma. It's a real mixed bag. And for these people, there's not one quick fix. You know, there's lots of different solutions needed. I have choice, and I would like to exercise that choice to implement change. And I encourage other people to make, you know, we think about so many different things in what we prescribe for our patients. We think about sustainability. We think about the challenges of maintaining sort of zero carbon. I ask people also to think about inclusivity, because there are companies who have taken this on and they have affected change within their own companies. And, you know, that's one thing that I can do. I can actually affect change in that way. And there's such a choice now. It's not as if I'm disadvantaging my patients in any way, shape or form, but I wouldn't be my first line if they're not giving information to everybody. I'm not prescribing their medications.
Dr. Sean Clark, so it must be dispiriting to hear these kind of comments, especially in this day and age, in an area like Yorkshire, which, you know, multicultural, not exactly kind of off the beaten track, you know, massive population and a real kind of challenge to be faced as well. How do you feel when you hear stories like this?
It's really kind of heartening to hear some of the work that people like Dr. Linus Jones have been doing and others have been doing around to try and tackle some of these challenges. But as we alluded to earlier on, the fact that these challenges exist in the first place in 2022 is just unbelievable. Everybody across the UK, no matter the race, religion, where they live, where they come from, should be entitled to the same access to health and care services and entitled to the same health and care outcomes. Currently, we don't see that. You know, the statistics across Yorkshire and Humber and other regions across the country, where just because if you live in one postcode area and you travel 200 yards down the road, your life expectancy can change by 3, 4, 5 years. Absolutely incredible that that can exist. And we need interventions exactly like what we've just been talking about to tackle some of that.
When the reading average is actually less than 8 in the locality that I serve, it doesn't mean that people read at this language in the level of key stage 2 children at primary school. What it actually means is a lot of people don't read and it brings the average down. So I think when we did non-face-to-face work during the pandemic, it was really, really obvious, because you wouldn't have people physically bringing their medications in or repeat prescriptions for us to read in clinic. We were asking people to tell us over the telephone, and it was really obvious that a lot of people couldn't read out what was on their inhalers. They just weren't able to do that. So 1 in 6 patients are functionally literate. I see 12 patients in a clinic, so that means at least 2 of those people can't read anything more than sort of things that are familiar, like recipes or birthday cards. And so giving them new information is really, really challenging.
Throughout the pandemic, what we did see was this rapid introduction of innovation across the health and care system at a scale and pace that we didn't expect. Much of that, as we've just kind of alluded to, was around digital services, services to allow people to continue accessing health and care whilst at home. What that did was allow us to access a whole new population and whole new kind of group of patients who, because of where they might live miles away from a GP surgery. Traditionally, they just wouldn't go. They'd suffer at home, they'd live at home, get it on with a condition that might be getting worse and worse day by day, and ultimately in the long term is going to end up not only costing the NHS a lot of money to treat, but is also going to severely impact their health and well-being and their life outcomes. So what we need to do is to make sure that we continue to embrace innovation. Those digital innovations and all sorts of other innovations that allow people to access health and care freely and easily and openly, but importantly that equity and making sure that everybody has the same ability to access it. If somebody wants to go and do a face-to-face appointment, they can. If somebody, because they live in the middle of the countryside but have access to a computer and internet connection, why not engage with the GP remotely if that's how they want to do it and what works for them?
The other point I'd make as well is some of my patients have to make a choice in coming to my clinic because they're on 0 hours contracts, for instance, if they're going to earn money that day or they're going to come to Dewsbury Hospital to see my clinic. So I see the non-face-to-face work as very positive, actually. And, you know, I often manage very nicely just phoning people or, like you say, doing video calls, because actually they don't physically have to come and take that time off and lose the income and the earnings. And for people who are socially deprived, that's a huge, huge thing. So I think we're bringing down barriers in ways that we don't actually consciously appreciate, but they're there, and it's been really nice to work in a different way.
So do you think that this issue, we started the interview by saying that, you know, health inequalities are rising, life expectancy is falling. I mean, do you think that there is a chance of us perhaps arresting those very, you know, worrying kind of changes quite soon, thanks to the work that you and your colleagues are doing, thanks to the HSN network?
I mean, as I alluded to in my presentation, we saw the pandemic really highlighted the prevalence and impact of health inequalities. And it was played out through the disproportionate impact that we saw the pandemic had on different patient populations, different geographies. The pandemic and its kind of impact on society was obviously stark, obviously incredible. But actually, health inequalities have been around for a long time. It's a challenge we've been facing for a long time. One of the good things, as it were, to come out of the pandemic is that health inequalities have really been brought into people's focus. Now, health inequalities we're seeing talked about across everywhere. It's, you know, it was always in the NHS long-term plan, but all of a sudden it's highlighted in the operational planning guidance. Integrated care systems, their new role, it's as part of them around tackling population health. So I think right the way across the system, we're going to see health inequalities become embedded in everything, not just a standalone thing, embedded across everything that we do, and then that's how we can start to properly develop a system-wide approach to tackling health inequalities.
So I imagine you're no longer a lone voice, hopefully. Is that what you're hoping?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just thinking when Sean was speaking there, just recalling sort of before the pandemic, I've been doing this work, as I alluded to, for about sort of 5 years in total, and trying to persuade people to come on board, and it's been so challenging. The no's are so draining, and they never come from a good place, but from a sort of a dark and murky place, really. And what we've seen during the pandemic is people actually recognising the problem, and there's a huge shift in conversations now. People wouldn't talk to me before. People were actually wanting me to talk to them, and there's been a real shift and a real movement to sort of try and address things instead of just brushing it into the carpet and paying lip service, which I think is what we were seeing in previous years, Sean, and yeah. I think that's what you summarised so beautifully just then.
Yeah, I'd agree with that completely.
And do you think as well, when it comes to this work, this kind of change of attitude, you know, the pandemic, maybe it's a spin-off from that, there is such a thing, but the AHSN network, the role that we play in making sure people are aware of it, open to things like grants and support, things like that, is that really helping now, do you think?
Oh, massively. Like I said, you alluded to me a lone wolf. I absolutely was. It was such, felt really, really lonely at times, and I don't feel lonely anymore, which is really lovely, actually. And the HSN have been crucial, and, you know, I'm very, very lucky, like I said, to work with Harriet Smith at the HSN, who's just a driving force for change. The way that the HSN is connecting me to different agencies, making those links, encouraging me, you know, giving me support, and like you say, finding the grants and all the things that the HSN is absolutely crucial to the work that I've done. I've been so grateful for the support I've had. For me, you know, I've no wish to, you know, be famous or do anything. You know, I genuinely just want to sit in my clinic and not feel like I'm being very, very, very inequitable in my care. I want to finish my career feeling I can treat everybody equally with and supported by resources to do that. And, you know, if I achieve that goal by the end of my career, I'd be absolutely delighted. So I need help for that. Yeah.
And Sean, just finally, what's the challenge and what does the future look like? I'm sure there's many other projects you'd like to support. Is that what's in the pipeline now? Are you hopeful that what you were saying just before, that there is hope and the projects like Written Medicine and others are in the pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were just talking there about bringing kind of scale to a lone voice and one voice. And I think that really demonstrates the power of the HSN network. We're so well connected locally and we've got that really wide reach nationally. What we can do is to work with people who've got these ideas, those what are quite small scale ideas initially, aren't necessarily getting the traction that they deserve. Help them to power up those ideas across the region, across the places where they are, work with the trusts, the integrated care systems in their region, and then work at national network level to start to spread that across the country. Integrated care systems are only going to be playing more and more focus to this. We, across the HSN network, we work so closely with the integrated care systems, we've got that ability to act as that bridge to try and facilitate some of those conversations and really drive that change. It's an agenda which nationally across the network we're really, really strongly focused on, and we're going to continue scaling up our work in this space.
Yorkshire respiratory consultant Dr. Klinos Jones and Dr. Sean Clarkson, the Head of Strategic Operations for the Yorkshire and Humber AHSN. Thanks for listening to this podcast from the AHSN network. For more, just search wherever you download your podcasts from.